SiriusXM presents Stanford Pathfinders.
Stanford has 225,000 alumni living all over the globe in 151 countries, and they're some of the most amazing people you would ever want to meet.
A show about how the graduates of Stanford University are changing our lives and the world.
We'll hear very interesting things from business leaders in the technology sector, but well beyond that, the worlds of politics, entertainment, business, and beyond.
Inspiring stories from America's innovation heartland.
It's a place where people look to the future, not to the past, where they don't rest on their laurels. Think about the gold rush. Think about Stanford being formed in the late 1800s. And then Stanford was the beginning of Silicon Valley. And the ethos of Silicon Valley is deeply embedded in the Stanford spirit. It's a spirit of innovation, experimentation. It's a spirit of being willing to try new things and risk failure as long as you fail forward.
Welcome to Stanford Pathfinders.
Director at Lightspeed Venture Partners.
Got pretty intense about showing people that, no, I'm going to earn this on my own, you know? And so I really worked at it.
Author of By the Grace of the Game.
You think about the life that my family was able to live because of the game, you know, given where we've come from, it's a miracle. And the game did that.
This week on Stanford Pathfinders, Dan Grunfeld. Now, here's your host, Howard Wolf.
Resilience has always been a topic of discussion. Discussions about grit and the ability to overcome adversity have always been of high interest. But resilience has never been more popular on a topic than it is today. Whether it be due to COVID, our national politics, or a combination of these and other factors, resilience is a topic du jour. Today's guest on Stanford Pathfinders has elegantly tapped into this popular zeitgeist with a book that beautifully shares a multi-generational story about resilience. Dan Grunfeld, the author of By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, A Basketball Legacy, and An Unprecedented American Dream, tells his family story in beautiful detail, weaving in and out of the many different challenges that he, his father, and grandmother faced. A two-time Stanford graduate, Dan attended Stanford as an undergraduate, where he also played on the men's basketball team. After playing professional basketball in Europe and then Israel, Dan went to Stanford's Graduate School of Business, where he earned his MBA. When not writing books, he works in the venture capital business. Dan, welcome to the show.
Howard, thank you so much for having me.
All right, I always like to start these shows in the same way, and that's asking the alums Stanford origin story. So, I mean, you talked about this in the book in a beautiful way, but why Stanford?
You know, so I visited Stanford's campus when I was in seventh grade, and my grandmother lives 25 minutes away from campus, and it was a top school in the world, top basketball program in the world. And so I said, this is where I want to go to college. This is where I want to play my basketball. It was a long shot for me at the time. But, you know, as I grew and my basketball skills developed, you know, I got closer and closer. And at the end there, I had some luck, you know, some good fortune, and I ultimately made it happen. But so part of it was just to experience, you know, Stanford academically and athletically, but a big part of it was to be near my grandmother.
All right. I've had a lot of reasons for people choosing Stanford, but I got to tell you, you're the first one I've ever heard say, I wanted to be near my grandmother. We're going to talk a little bit more about this during our conversation, but this relationship you have with your grandmother is absolutely amazing.
It's so special. I mean, we've always been really close. You know, my grandmother's a Holocaust survivor. She would always, you know, visit us when I was living in New Jersey and spend weeks at a time with us. And we have just always been amazingly close. And yeah, visiting her out in the Bay and seeing Stanford's campus, it all came together. You know, and she's the best cook in the world, by the way. So that factored in as well, right? I kind of imagined these meals that I would be having. So it all just worked. And honestly, when I stepped foot on Stanford's campus, I mean, love at first sight, it might be a little hyperbolic, but it's almost true. I saw the buildings and I smelled the air and, you know, I heard the band at one point. I was like, I got to be here.
Well, it worked out well. Speaking of Stanford, before we get to the book, I want to just query you. What are your favorite memories from Stanford? I'm thinking about two things, basketball and not basketball, and undergrad and GSB. I mean, you have all these connection points at Stanford. Help me with that.
Yeah, I mean, I spent six amazing years at Stanford. I mean, so on the basketball side, you know, we were the number one team in the country my sophomore year. And so there's just unbelievable memories there. I mean, we beat Arizona on a 35-foot buzzer beater, which I'm sure you remember.
And
I'm sure
I remember it vividly.
Yeah. You know, it's called the Miracle at Maples. It happened to be my 20th birthday, right? So, I mean, it was But, you know, it was just a surreal moment. And I still tell people, I've never, you know, the feeling of like you're floating on a cloud, or they say cloud nine, like I've never felt like I felt that day. It was such an amazing experience. And I just had so many wonderful memories on the basketball side. And just being a student, I mean, I mentioned the band, like we did the band run my freshman year. It was my teammates, you know, and we went out, we followed the band, and we just ran all around campus. And I just remember looking at, you know, my teammates were also my best friends, and just saying, wow, like, we're the luckiest people on earth. You know, we're part of this amazingly vibrant, fun, just incredible community. And so, yeah, and it continued into the GSB, you know, making lifelong friends. It's, you know, Stanford is truly a special, special place.
All right, let's transition to the book, because that's the reason I wanted to have you on the show, because, I mean, we've known each other for years, but this is special what you've done here. So tell us a little bit about By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, A Basketball Legacy, and An Unprecedented American Dream. What's the book about?
So, you know, I played basketball at Stanford and then 8 years professionally. My dad was a professional basketball player. So he was a longtime NBA player and a longtime NBA executive. So he's very well known in the sports world and in particular in the basketball world. But few people know that he's the only player in NBA history whose parents survived the Holocaust. And that's my grandmother, who lives in the Bay Area. And so this family story always has impacted me so much. It's a big reason why I was very motivated to succeed as an athlete and as a student, you know, this kind of history I carry. And I've always loved to write. That love really blossomed at Stanford. You know, I was lucky to be nominated for the Booth Prize as a freshman, which really kind of got me, you know, my imagination going about, oh, what could I accomplish as a writer? And so always loved to write. And when I entered the GSB, I endeavored to tell the story. And so I started doing the research. It took more than 5 years, but the book comes out, you know, November 30th. And, you know, I'm very proud of it. And it's a very personal story that it has been my honor to tell.
All right. But you've got this very personal story. You've got this multi-generational story. Most of us would just tell those stories to our children or to other people we meet. But you decided to distill this into a book. Why write that book, though? I mean, did you think that people wanted to hear your story? Was it something that you wanted to codify for future generations? Why'd you choose to write the book? What was the catalyst for actually, because writing a book is brutal work.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. You did it, and you started it while you were at the GSB, which is an all-time consuming endeavor. So talk about that.
I love to tell stories, you know, and this story means the world to me, but I also think it's very relatable, you know, so it's our story, but it's also just a story of survival, of perseverance, of overcoming adversity, of love and legacy. You know, these are universal themes. And so it was important to me, and you said codify, like I wanted to memorialize this story. Like I will tell my kids this story, but I want them to be able to read it too. But also I wanted to share it with the wider world, because I'm so proud of what my grandmother has done, you know, what she went through and the type of person she is today. It's been so meaningful and impactful for me. Similarly with my dad, like he came to America as an immigrant at the age of 9, who didn't speak a word of English and had never touched a basketball, you know, the son of Holocaust survivors. He lost a brother to cancer within a year of being in the United States. And, you know, he found basketball, and 10 years later, he was standing on the podium as an Olympian for the United States of America. You know, so it's an incredibly meaningful story for me, but it's also an American dream story. So, you know, for all those reasons, I wanted to tell it personally, but I also wanted other people to experience it.
All right. So you just referred to this, but what struck me, there are so many things that struck me about the book. I just loved the book, but
thank you.
What really struck me is that it details some tremendous trauma that you recently went through. And then I read somewhere that you said that holding on to traumatic events in one's life or one's family's life is vitally important. A lot of people might say, no, let go of the trauma, forget the trauma, and let's look forward. But you are codifying the trauma. And I'm just curious, talk to us a little bit about why that was so important to you.
You know, I really learned it from my grandmother, who lost 7 immediate family members in the Holocaust. You know, so that's both parents and 5 siblings were killed. But she talks about it. And she says, just because a story is difficult doesn't mean you shouldn't tell it. You know, and we need to honor those who passed away. We need to certainly honor those who survived, and also make sure it never happens again, not only to Jews, but to anyone, by telling stories of trauma, whether it's the Holocaust or whether it's my uncle passing away, you know, you really, you honor those people and you make sure their memories last. And you can imagine my pride where I can show my grandma my book and I can say, hey, your family now lives forever. Our family lives forever, right? Because she always says, you know, they don't have graves to visit. You know, they were just taken to Auschwitz and never seen again. And but now because of my book, they live forever. So just because a story is difficult doesn't mean it shouldn't be told.
And I guess you could also add that at a time when Holocaust survivors are no longer as plentiful, right? We're losing because of obviously old age and dying. And that we live in a day and age when there are so many growing numbers of Holocaust deniers that it's even more important to codify what happened. I mean, look at your grandmother having lost her, both of her parents and five of her siblings. I mean, she can tell that story and it's a real story and no one can deny her that story.
100%. And I say like the Holocaust almost seems like an abstraction at this point in history because we know the number 6 million, right? And there was millions more people. It's unfathomable. It's almost impossible to wrap the mind around. But I tell people, you know, it wasn't that long ago and it wasn't that far away. You know, my grandma was there. You know, and she's still, God willing, alive and well, 96, living in the Bay Area, playing bridge five times a week, winning probably four times a week. you know, you want to eat her cooking and you don't want to play cards against her.
And I don't want the listeners to misunderstand, although the book does, in fact, deal with some tremendous trauma and pain. At the same time, it's a story of hope. It's a story of redemption. It's a story of resilience. And, so it must have been difficult as the writer of this book to sort of juxtapose those two things, right? Trauma and pain, but at the same time, hope and resilience.
And that's what life is. You know, life is very full. There are moments of pain. There are moments of beauty. You know, there's joy and there's sadness. And those two things exist alongside each other. And so, and that's really my family story. You know, and when, as I was writing it, I had to almost sit inside these moments, you know, so writing about the Holocaust was very difficult. Writing about my uncle passing was difficult. But then I got to write scenes about my dad becoming this sensation overnight, you know, and basketball taking our family to amazing places. And so, you know, that was kind of the truth of our family story. I think that's the truth of kind of how life is.
Well, when you came to play basketball, when you came to Stanford and you also played basketball, I don't want to say you came to Stanford to be a basketball player, but you certainly were a heck of a basketball player at Stanford. Yeah. I remember saying, hold on a second, is this Ernie Grunfeld's kid? And of course, I knew of your dad. I knew of his college career. I knew of his professional career. I didn't know as much about his professional career in management in the NBA, but I certainly didn't know his background. And I was blown away to think that here's a young kid who comes from Transylvania, right? Romanian-Hungarian border, comes to America at the age of 9, speaks not one lick of English, and never touched a basketball. And what, 7-8 years later, he is one of the most heavily recruited kids in high school, ends up playing college ball in a big way, ends up going to the Olympics. I mean, just learning English in that period of time and excelling and going into college is one thing, but taking up a game you've never played in your life and doing it at such a high level, that was just an amazing story.
And then that's why I wanted to write it, you know, because I always had this sense growing up of just how profound it was. And, you know, my book is called By the Grace of the Game, you know, and it's titled that quite intentionally. The game was really heaven sent for my family. I mean, it came out of nowhere and, you know, it saved, you know, my dad in many ways. Because I mentioned he had lost his brother. You know, my grandparents were immigrants who had to work 6 or 7 days a week to kind of make ends meet and build a life in America. And my dad was in New York City, learning the language, making friends. So he just went to the park to play basketball. And the levels that he reached were incredible.
Well, this is also, it speaks to another issue here that I've known for years, but most people don't. And that is that the game of basketball back in the day was a Jewish game. It's always been sort of an inner city ghetto game. And the Jews lived in ghettos in the inner cities. And it was a very much a Jewish game at the time. And it's become something obviously different today, but there's some great roots of Jewish players in this game.
Without a doubt. And in the 20s and 30s and the tenements in New York City and Jewish immigrants, basketball was a sport. And, you know, I write about this in the book that, you know, a year after Auschwitz was liberated, right, in 1946, there was the first game in the NBA, and it was between the New York Knicks and the Toronto Huskies. And all five members of the starting lineup for the Knicks were Jewish. And the first basket in NBA history was scored by Ozzie Schechtman from Kew Gardens, Queens, you know? But there was very deep Jewish roots with the game of basketball.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about your dad. So an amazing, iconic basketball player. So on the one hand, as a young man coming up in your life and playing basketball, that's a gift, right? Ernie Grunfeld, mm-hmm. your dad. On the other hand, that's a burden, because that is a big name to have as your dad, as you're trying to be a basketball player as well. Talk a little bit about that to us.
Yeah, 100%. As you know, I write about it very honestly in my book. I mean, you know, it was a wonderful gift to have a dad who had been such a great player. He was a successful executive, you know, during my childhood. And most importantly, he's an amazing father. You know, he's family first. He cares so much about his children. People ask me about growing up and did your dad, you know, force basketball on you, and how bad did he want you to become a great player? And I tell them the truth. You know, my dad didn't force basketball on me at all. He always told me, you don't even have to play basketball. You do whatever you like, find your interests and explore them. And my mom was the same way, but what kid doesn't want to be like his dad, you know? And so I loved the game. I loved, you know, playing and improving, but there was pressure there. You know, I remember walking into gyms when I was in third, fourth grade, and it'd be like, oh, that's Ernie's kid. Or if I made a team, or if I, you know, played well, like, oh yeah, the coach favors him because he's Ernie's son. And as you know, Howard, because you read the book, I developed a chip on my shoulder, would be a fair statement, right? But I got pretty intense about showing people that, no, I'm going to earn this on my own, you know? And so I really worked at it. I was, you know, I wanted to succeed. And when I did, I was brash about it, right? Because it's really fun to succeed as an athlete. But some of that was the pressure that I felt from having a kind of a famous father in that area.
Now, I assume your dad's read the book.
He has.
And what did he tell you about his impressions of the book?
So first and foremost, very proud of me, you know, because listen, this is life or death stuff that I wrote about. You know, these are people who are no longer with us and die too young or were taken too young. And so again, to be able to memorialize that is really special for our family. It's also been very hard for him, you know, and you probably got a sense of that, Howard, reading the book, is that basketball brought him away from a lot of very painful things. And I think it speaks to the power of sports, to, you know, the power of community, but those were things that he really never wanted to look back on because they were so painful. And I talk about privilege a lot in the book, because I'm privileged in a variety of ways. And one of those ways is that I have a generation of separation from all this tragedy. So I'm able to talk about it, you know? And so my dad didn't really have that luxury. So while he was very proud of me, it was also painful and difficult.
So I want to talk a little bit more about your grandmother. And one of the most striking parts of the book is, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I want to dive deeper here, is your everlasting love for Anyu, your grandmother, who came from Transylvania on the Romanian side of the Hungarian border, who was this amazing chef, as you said earlier. But more than that, this is like this iconic figure in your life. Mm-hmm. And she's still with us, which is just amazing, at the age of 96 here in the Bay Area. Tell us a little bit more about your grandmother, why she's such a fundamental figure in your life. I mean, we all love our grandparents, but this is a different sort of relationship. I mean, you said it earlier. One of the reasons you wanted to come to Stanford was because your grandmother was living less than 35 miles away, right? So tell us a little bit more about Anyu.
You know, I say about my grandma, if she can go through what she went through and overcome what she overcame and still be the most positive, warm, wonderful person that she is today, there's hope for us all. You know what I mean? Like, she's just been the most incredible example in my life about what the human spirit, what's possible with the human spirit, you know? And so she's just, you know, I admire her, respect her, and love her so much. And you read, like, she has a very big story in the war. You know, she was saved twice by Swedish diplomat Raoul Wallenberg. She risked her life to save others. You know, so I tell people, my grandmother is not only my hero, she's also a hero. You know, she obtained false documents for herself and risked her life to obtain 17 others for people who needed them. So, you know, she always does the right thing. She always stands up for what's right. She is so loving and so wonderful. And you know, she is really everything that's right with humanity is represented through my grandma, in my eyes, at the very least.
And boy, through my eyes as well, in reading your book. And it's not just that she lived it, but she has wisdom that she imparts. And you say here in the book, the greatest lesson Anyu had ever taught me was that it's not about what happens to you in life. It's about how you respond to what happens to you. And Lord knows that she's talking about what happened to her and losing her parents, losing her five siblings, you know, evading the Nazis in World War II, through all kinds of strokes of luck and fate. And that's informed her life, but it sounds like it's informed your life path as well.
100%. You know, and that's the name of the game. And I'll tell you, you know, we all go through our different struggles, right? And what parents, and I'm a parent, right? What, and you know this, Howard, what parents want is for their kids and their grandkids to have better lives than they do, and to have more opportunities and everything like that. And my grandmother and my dad were able to provide that for me. But I still have my struggles, you know, and they were different than my parents, my grandparents. But, you know, I had a very bad knee injury when I was playing basketball at Stanford. And that to me was a huge disappointment. That was a very hard thing to go through. By the way, my grandma was sitting 20 feet away from the basket when I hurt my knee. And when I finally came to my senses and I'm still on the ground, she was kneeling next to me, rubbing my head, you know, so that's, you know, the support I have for my grandma. But that night we went out for dinner and she said to me, you know, she calls me Tatala, you know, which is a Yiddish term of endearment. And she said, Tatala, if this is the worst thing that ever happens to you, you're going to be okay.
This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf. More with Dan Grunfeld on his new book, By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, a Basketball Legacy, and an Unprecedented American Dream. This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf, and I'm speaking with Dan Grunfeld, author of By the Grace of the Game, The Holocaust, a Basketball Legacy, and an Unprecedented American Dream. What you point out in the book, which I thought was super powerful, is that your grandmother went through an existential crisis where not only did she lose all those family members, but she was at risk of losing her life. Your father overcame other challenges, coming to America at 9 years old, speaking no English, not knowing how to play the game of basketball. He overcame huge challenges as well. They weren't as existential as your mother's, right? He wasn't going to die, but they were big struggles. You, as you say in the book, are a privileged man, right? You're white, you're male, you were raised in a very well-off family, you went to good schools and what have you, but you still had challenges. So what I thought was fascinating is that it doesn't matter the size of the challenge, they're all challenges, and we have to figure out how to respond.
100%, and you know, you should always honor your path. And I think that's, and my, you know, my grandma, my dad, they always told me that, you know, and your problems matter. And you always, you know, you should feel good and you should feel fulfilled. And so, yeah, it was, and I struggled with that, you know, because listen, God willing and thankfully, I'm not going to have the challenges that my grandmother had. Because like you said, she went through something unthinkable, you know, but that doesn't mean that my challenges still don't matter and still aren't, you know, very, very important to me. And my grandma always supported me through those things and always supported me actually through that notion of really respecting, you know, my hardships, because, you know, of course they couldn't compare to hers, but there's nothing that made her more happy that they couldn't, you know, she wouldn't want them to.
So when I sat down to read the book, and I was very much looking forward to it, right? Because we've known each other and I'm just excited that you wrote this. There was a part of me that sort of wondered, how are you going to tie the game of basketball? I mean, look at the title, By the Grace of the Game. So we're talking about the game of basketball. And then you talk about the Holocaust, right? These are like, it's not an apple and an orange. It's, you know, it's an apple and a screwdriver. I mean, it's so different, right? And you say there's been darkness, but by the grace of God, there's also been basketball. So you're elevating basketball as this vehicle. And then you say, how important has this game been to your family? Well, you say it's never was your end, but instead a means to discover your end. So most people think of basketball, it's just a game, right? Yeah. But what you're describing here is that for your family, it was a vehicle for transformation.
If you think about the life that my family was able to live because of the game, you know, given where we'd come from, it's a miracle. And the game did that. And it's not only about opportunity and profession and this and that, it's about community. And so my dad's friends, his, you know, are all his teammates, and the people that we've kind of, you know, grown close to, it was all through the game. I think about my grandparents who, again, came to America with such a hard background, and they got to watch my dad stand on the top of the Olympic podium in Montreal as a gold medalist. So the game did that, you know, and that's, it's just an unbelievable gift.
You gave yourself a gift after your freshman year, I think it was. When did you meet Crazy Frank?
Oh, I've known Frank for a long time. So Frank was a family friend, but he moved to the Bay Area right before I got to Stanford. So once I got on campus, he was already kind of coming to my games and, you know, part of my circle.
So tell the listeners about who Crazy Frank is and what he did for your life.
So Frank, and I do refer to him as Crazy Frank in the book lovingly. I didn't say anything about him in the book that I wouldn't say to his face, Howard. Okay, so let's just be very honest about that. But Frank is a trainer, and he trained people for the military. He has an unorthodox style, an extraordinarily intense style. He likes to say that 1 in 7 elite athletes will come back for a second session of his training, because that's just how demanding it is and how rigorous it is. And I can confirm that. You know, and so when I was a freshman and sophomore at Stanford, he was telling me, he said, dude, come work out with me. You don't know what you could be like. Come work out, come work out. And I would say, Frank, I'm on the number one team in the country at Stanford. You know, I'm good. And I had a very disappointing sophomore year personally. You know, I didn't play well, and I needed a little bit of a change of pace. And I started working out with Frank. And listen, I mean, for as unorthodox as his methods are, and for as, you know, kind of nutty as he can be, he can train people like I've never seen. And I was the most improved player in the country between my sophomore and junior years, and the most improved player in the history of Stanford's basketball program. So I went from averaging 3.5 points per game to 18. And so we were running sand hills, and we were, you know, doing exercises that I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemy, because they were very grueling and very taxing. But listen, if you had the will to succeed, you would put yourself through it. And the results showed.
How will you know if, by the grace of the game, your book, how will you know whether this was a success?
Yeah. And so, you know, listen, we're Stanford people, right? So there's a type A mentality and you know, this want to really succeed in the formal sense. But my dad was really awesome, because I was talking to him about that months ago, about, you know, driving and pushing, and, you know, you want to do well, and you want to beat the competition like you did in sports. And he kind of cut me off, and he said, hey, man, you've already succeeded, because it's done. You already did it. You told a really meaningful, important story that matters so much to our family, that we'll have for forever. It's done. You've succeeded. And so I try to remember that, but I'm fighting my instincts, right? I'm fighting the kid who got to Stanford, you know, and got to the GSB. And I think that's probably a tension many of us in our community have felt. So while I'd want to say that I've already succeeded, of course, inside of me, I'm pushing very hard to spread this story far and wide, mostly because I think that it can have an impact.
Well, Dan, listen, congratulations on this book. It was masterfully done. I enjoyed it thoroughly. You and I have many things in common. We're both Jewish. We both have Hungarian, essentially, backgrounds. By the way, I didn't tell you this earlier, but I grew up in New Jersey. And so there were a lot of things in your book that resonated with me, and I think it'll resonate with our listeners as well. Thank you so very, very much for being on the show.
Howard, I appreciate it. I'm grateful, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stanford Pathfinders on SiriusXM. Listen to this and other episodes anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app or wherever you like to find your podcasts.